Okay, dear colleagues and friends, a black suit with red cuffs, a classic with a twist. It was the outfit of the conductor of the last night of the proms in September. For me, the concert marks the end of summer. I enjoy this recurring event on BBC almost every year, because of the music and because of the Mad Hats and all the other charming British strangeness. The conductor, Marine Alsop, was another reason to love the last night of the proms, and not just because of her red cuffs. In 2013, she was the first woman to conduct this concert of concerts. She did a good job back then. But now, 10 years later, she wasn't just good, she was great. Self-confidence from head to toe. Marine Alsop demonstrated that although it matters what you do, it's how you do it that will get people going. She had the whole Royal Albert Hall in her stylish black pocket. And there's more to love about Marine Alsop. I noticed her doing something remarkable, something new during the traditional conductor's speech. She made this understated gesture, inviting people to applaud, talking about conducting. I call it an Alsop, and let's see if we can practice it together later on. Back to the Royal Albert Hall. At the end, the presenter cried out, "We needed this, we really needed this." She didn't tell what sort of need she was thinking of, but I guess she meant something like, it's comforting that in this confusing, darkening, post-Brexit world, there are still beautiful things we can enjoy together. I wanted to tell you about Marine Alsop and how she operated, because there are many similarities with what we speechwriters try to achieve. Our American friend and speech guru David Murray would call it a big group hug. And the link with my main subject is comfort, because not only beautiful music, but also the right words at the right time may bring comfort. The question is how to find those right words. At the spring conference in Oxford, I told Brian, oh, this is a good time to do the Alsop. Come on, people, for Brian. It works. Well, thank you, Brian, for bringing us here in The Hague. Well done. I said to Brian at the conference, at this conference in The Hague, I would like to say something about commemorative speeches that recur every year. The trouble is, how to stay fresh. You may be tempted to just copy the speech of last year. I advise you not to. It reminds me of an incident in the Netherlands last spring. The mayor of Amsterdam delivered a speech for veterans. Unfortunately, someone at town hall must have opened the wrong document and given her a copy of last year's speech. A clear case of Murphy's Law. And yes, the veterans noticed and were not amused. It even made the news, and the headlines blamed the mayor. That arrogant woman. This is, of course, a speechwriter's nightmare. I have chocolates in my bag for the Amsterdam speechwriters here. Where are they? Okay, I will hand it out during the coffee break. Comfort is my thing. But the incident does show that people listen closely to commemorative speeches, and that's the good news. At the Dutch Ministry of Justice and Security, we have a special category of commemorations for policemen and firefighters who died doing their job. And also every year, several speeches for people who died through violence. The audience usually consists of families, of family, friends, and colleagues, people who feel sad and have been hurt. I always feel a strong responsibility to do justice towards the victims and the people they left behind. But if I'm honest, I also feel hesitation, as if I have to cross a threshold first, as if I don't really want to write a speech. Where does that come from? Is it really because the occasion is not very different from last year? Because there is no news, no excitement? Or is it because it is so difficult to find the right words? I believe the main reason is you have nothing to sell. No policy, no corporate story, no political message, no controversial measurements. No one is to be persuaded to support your speaker. And that's the gap, the emptiness, the void you are facing, the void that needs to be filled by us speechwriters. And there's little to hold on to. Last July, there was a commemoration for a Dutch policeman who was murdered by a truck driver, July 7, 2021. On that dark day, the policeman gave the truck driver a stop sign. The truck driver didn't like that, and as became later, he already held a grudge against the police force. He chose to drive his truck over the policeman. It was horrible. What do you tell the victim's mother, his colleagues, his friends? How do you offer them comfort? How on earth can you tell them they're still good in the world? You will feel inclined to fill the void with words, lots of words, and there you can easily go wrong. Because there are a lot of don'ts in this area, beyond printing last year's speech. I'd like to highlight three ways to prevent annoying the audience, inspired not only by my experience as a speechwriter, but also as someone who's tragically lost a loved one a few years ago. Firstly, keep away from playing a therapist. Never write that you understand what someone is going through. You don't. There's no room for "I feel your pain." I know it worked for Bill Clinton in his first presidential campaign, but he said it to people who had lost their job, not their son. And even if your speaker was involved in something similar, still, everyone experiences pain and loss in their own way. Secondly, keep away from playing a fortune teller. Don't claim things will get better. You have no idea if they will. By saying that, you put pressure on people. Apparently, you expect them to get over it. But time doesn't heal all wounds. And lastly, don't pretend you can solve the problem. By writing something like, "I will do everything in my power to make things better for you." Well meant, no doubt, but, and pardon me saying this, it's bullshit. Your speaker may try to learn something from what has happened, change rules, rights, or regulations, but it won't bring the loved ones people miss so dearly, won't it? Then keep away from playing God. But what then? Please remember that your minister, mayor, CEO or otherwise, very important person, is showing up at the commemoration to offer recognition. Recognition of the pain, of the loss, and recognition of the fact that it is exceptional what has happened. 2 years ago, a mentally unstable person destroyed a memorial for victims of violence in the north of the Netherlands. And honestly, at first I underestimated the impact of what had happened. My then minister had such a busy schedule. Was it really necessary for him to go there and pay his respect? Couldn't we just send a warm personal letter? But the minister himself decided to visit, and he was right. I realized it was the right decision when I spoke with the lady who had raised the memorial many years ago after her daughter was murdered. She opened my eyes by telling me how shocking it was for the families of the victims to be confronted with violence again. It had brought up extremely painful feelings. She rightfully wanted recognition for that pain. And recognition is key to finding the right words to fill the void. This is about speaking as if you are listening. It seems to be a theme this morning. Not speaking out, but taking in. I see you and I hear you. I often model the speech as a visit to someone who has experienced a loss. The formula is empathy, sympathy, admiration, and hope. You start by showing empathy in a modest, quiet way. You could use a short poem or a reverie. Then you say something sympathetic about the deceased. When it's about a group, like fallen firefighters, you can praise their braveness in general and also elaborate on someone in particular. You show admiration for the people in the audience because they console and help each other. And you end with the hope that the occasion will offer them comfort and peace. Empathy, sympathy, admiration, and hope. Nothing more, nothing less. Try to find out as much as you can about the feelings of the people in the audience. When you dive deep, you will find pearls for your speech. I have often been amazed about how brave, strong, and caring people are after a terrible event. Listen to them. Interview them if you have the chance. Don't hesitate at this point. Often people are willing to talk about their loss. Use their words in your speech. They will be the best you will ever find to write. The mother of the killed policeman asked my current minister to compliment the bravery of the other policemen who faced the same risks her son did. And she also asked the minister to say something about what a sweet boy her son had been. There's a lot of love, strength, and altruism behind that simple request. It made me cry while writing, and that was a good sign, telling me that I was on the right track, filling the void. Dear friends, let me wrap up. I felt a bit sad when the last tones of Auld Lang Syne died away in the Royal Albert Hall. And the last night of the proms came to an end. The end of summer and the end of a joyful evening. But here was Maureen Elsop once more, the inventor of the Elsop, speaking as if she had been listening to me. She announced the date for the proms next year and encouraged me to put it already in my agenda. Something to look forward to. I told you I started off with the idea that the difficulty was in the repetition of events. And now, At the end of this thinking and speaking exercise, I realize that, on the contrary, it is a blessing. There's great consolation in repetition. There will always be a next year to meet again and find comfort for audiences and for speechwriters too.
So I'm obviously a classicist, and one of the things that Aristotle said is there are three types of speeches. There's judicial, which is two people against each other, deliberative, which is persuasive, and epideictic, which is ceremonial. And I've always struggled to understand how we can really use epideictic speeches or commemorative ones, and I think you made that really clear. And I started thinking, you know, the archetypes of leader take charge and take care, and every leader does both, so maybe these are the chances for us to help our speaker fall into that take care category.
I understand now that I did something intelligent without knowing it. I just felt it lived that way.
I noticed is when she last spoke at one of our conferences in Cambridge, she used a song or music, introduced that at the beginning, gave a really good speech, and then linked back to it at the end. So I do notice these things, and you did them very well. Has anyone got any questions? Roger, do you mind getting your mic? Could you just go and talk to the mic guy?
Yeah.
Sorry. Has anyone got any questions? Yes.
I was just going to ask, what do you do if they can't display empathy? Because a lot of leaders don't have empathy.
We write it for them, don't we?
They don't.
And practice if necessary.
Yeah.
You have to just get through to your speaker. The minister I was talking of, the one who realized he had to go to the north of the country, he had a certain difficulty showing empathy, and we were trying all the time to dig it up. It was there. Everyone has empathy, but we have to help them showing it, don't we?
Yeah, that's sometimes quite tricky as a speechwriter to be able to kind of, if you can write empathy, but if they're, you know, if they're a psychopath, for example.
Yeah, it gets difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a solution for that.
On the back of that, there's also the challenge of how do we tell our speaker that they need to be empathetic when they might not see that that's an important role. So as a speechwriter, it might not just be giving them the words, but also giving them perhaps the agency. Did you have a question?
I have the same question.
Okay. Has anyone got a different question? Yes.
If you told us it's not so well to say,
By respecting their pain, by understanding that it is not it is what you've heard and what you heard them telling them.
Maybe it's, I think what I'm getting at is it's showing that you understand part of their pain, but not pretending you can understand the entirety of their pain. Is that?
Yeah, you acknowledge what you don't.
Yeah, you acknowledge it. Yeah.
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 You don't mirror it.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you don't try to. You know, it is something I experienced myself. Some people try to show empathy by saying, yeah, I have also experienced something terrible. But it's about them. And it feels as if it makes your own pain smaller at that time.
Jim,
you mentioned Bill Clinton.
Can you speak up? Sorry. Can everyone speak up, actually?
You mentioned Bill Clinton from my country, and I remember when Clinton did that. But what you forgot to mention was that I feel your pain, and he actually got down and hugged the woman. And I'm wondering, like, is there value, for example, in the physical act, in the rhetorical act of saying nothing, and the physical act of embracing?
Did you ask to meet Dutch people?
They're not so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Jim, I think I don't know how you feel about this, but of course, Bill Clinton has this talent. Yeah, I also, I don't trust him anymore after I never had sex with that woman. But before that, we all fell for that. It is a talent, but not many of us have that talent. So it's tricky, and in case someone, well, you know, the worst thing that can happen to you, that you lose a child, or, you know, someone very dear to you, I wouldn't advise to. Yeah. Not even for Bill Clinton.
It's not so much a question, but I guess it's the point at which there may be a fear from the speaker that they may want to cry, you know, to the point of being a psychopath. It could actually be compartmentalization, where you're trying so hard to hold it together yourself, you know, to be a leader. And I just wondered, had you any thoughts on tears at the podium?
I think that would be fantastic. Yeah, truly. When you, as long as you don't cry for yourself, but for what has happened, no problem. I delivered a speech when my father died 2 years ago, and I tried to write it in my speech so that I would cry at the end. It makes it easier for you. Yeah, but this is really, this helps. So the real emotion, where you know that you will be emotional, and when you have a good connection to your speaker, you know when he or she will get emotional, put it at the end and not at the start, because then it's so difficult to speak.
Even I cried when my father died. At the end of the...
At the end, yeah, yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Ruin it by crying at the wrong moment, aren't you?
Yeah, no, it's just last sentence.
Yeah.
That was it for me. Yeah.
I've got a question. I'm picking myself. You're talking a lot about speeches where bad things have happened, but there are lots of commemorative speeches that are to comfort people where nothing is bad.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, you know, Christmas speech or someone's birthday, it's still a commemorative speech. To what extent is this the same or different?
Part of it is, because that's also a big group hug. But of course there is no pain. So it's in a lesser variety. And also, you know, I think there are a lot of other possibilities for Christmas speeches, because I find them also very difficult to write. Michel and I organized a pub quiz for the whole Ministry of Finance, I believe, when we were fed up with writing Christmas speeches. So that works as well. But there are also, of course, also commemorations like
the remembrance of the war victims on the 4th of May.
You exactly knew what I was thinking, yeah. And then it's partially true, because you also have a message there that it is that we are so happy that we are living in peace and connecting people, you know. So you could, so then you use it partially.
We've got time for one or two more questions. Yeah.
Is it always a bad idea to use like personal examples to? Is it always a bad idea to use like personal examples to illustrate that you can relate in some way to
your own personal?
Yeah, well, it depends on the, of course, maybe not a loss of a son, or, but if you're talking about a national problem, or like you can use.
Of course, then it's a great idea.
Yeah.
This is really. It is really about people with a wound, people who are in pain. And then it is all about them, recognition of what they have experienced. But of course, when it is more a theme people recognize, and that is your gut feeling. I mean, when I had to write a speech now for a group of Jewish people who are mourning because of, maybe because of relatives of what happened in Israel, but also because of the loss of a safe haven, I wouldn't talk about myself. But that's a gut feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that. Okay.